Sam Cosentino all over this tournament. Sportsnet's insider when it comes to prospects, when it comes to junior hockey, joins me now. Sam, thank you very much for doing this. How are you?
Yeah, doing great, Scott. Happy New Year. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, no problem at all. Happy New Year to you whatsoever. Do you understand what I'm saying, Sam, that I felt like Russia got robbed a little bit there at the end with the interpretation of the call, and I want to believe Canada would have killed off the advantage anyway, even though it would have looked like a pretty murky situation, but I didn't want there to be any potential for any complaints after this game with regards to the officials.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from, and I'm going to roll back the tape a little bit to 2 years ago in Edmonton at the Hlinka Gretzky, when the U.S. was playing Canada and a goal was scored by the USA that didn't count because of the clock. And as a result of that, Canada ended up winning the game. And that was a different scenario because it was in Canada. They had the technology in the building to go back and look at it, but it had not been used in Red Deer, where the other part of the tournament was played, and it had not been used in Edmonton in any of the other games. So they decided to not use that technology, and the Americans got burned. And they had good reason to be pissed off about it, because when you look at it being on Canadian ice and you look at the technology being available in the building, especially for big key games, they would have reason to do so. What's different about this for me, Scott, is the fact that you're in Europe, you're playing with no officials from either one of the countries, so there's no bias there. And so it's someone completely independent who messed up the interpretation of the call, where there's no bias from any one particular country. So I do like the fact that, oh, it's a Canadian ref and they made the wrong call. It's a Canadian linesman, they made the wrong call. At least there's that to hang your hat on. And again, it is also a little bit different. If it's causal for a goal in and of itself, that's one thing. If it's causal for a penalty that would lead to obviously a tremendous man advantage that would give him the opportunity to score a goal, that's still a little bit of a different thing. But I get where you're coming from. You kind of want to win it on a clean slate with no complaints or nothing to worry about. But at least there was no involvement from any one of the countries that tilted that call.
It's a very good point that you bring up. And as I said, I don't think it takes away from the three-goal third period whatsoever. It's just a reason for complaint for Russia. Every gold medal winning team is different. How will you remember this gold medal winning team?
Well, the youngest team, with its defining moment in the tournament being the 6-0 loss to Russia in the preliminary game, and it defined a lot of things. It defined the fact that this team had resiliency, knowing that Lafreniere got hurt, knowing that Veleno was suspended, but also knowing that Joel Hofer was the guy who replaced Nico Daws and took over for the rest of the tournament. And what it did is allowed a couple of other guys in the next couple of games to kind of step up and establish themselves, and then get Canada back on track for what was ultimately the quarters, the semis, and of course the gold medal game. So that's the way I'd look at it. The youngest team with a clearly defining moment as the worst loss in the history of the program of excellence, 6-0 to Russia, and completely turned around to go back and beat that team in the final. I mean, we had the Barrett Hayton thing with him not taking off the helmet. You had the Lafreniere injury. You had the Veleno suspension. There was a lot of adversity that went along with that worst ever loss that could have completely turned the table the other way, and we could have been sitting here talking about a sixth place finish in back-to-back years as opposed to a gold medal.
Sportsnet's hockey analyst Sam Cosentino with me this morning on Sportsnet 650. You're absolutely right about Hayden. What a tournament for him, named captain. There's the whole helmet on during the anthem. There's the injury. There's the snipe show in the final. What did we learn about Barrett Hayton during the course of this tournament?
Well, you learned a lot about his resiliency, and I got to say, I do not like the fact that he didn't take his helmet off, and quite frankly, I didn't really like his reasoning for not taking the helmet off, and I did think that the Russian response was appropriate, where they pointed his helmet and a few of the guys didn't shake his hand. If it were the other way around, it would have been a national disaster here in Canada, so that part really bothers me. I like the fact how he addressed it quickly and addressed it with a very simple explanation about processing the loss. And then he was able, and the team was able to move on. But when you look at a player that was released by the Arizona Coyotes and Dale Hunter's reaction once that happened, the number one thing he talked about was the leadership. As happy as he was to have a player who was a returning player and a great two-way player and had NHL games under his belt, he was more excited about the leadership he was able to bring to the table. So when your captain does that, he owns up to the responsibility of doing that, and then he goes out and proves that he's one of the better players in the tournament after going through the injury. to me, it says everything about that player and his resiliency, and everything about that player and what his pro prospects are moving forward.
Is he a better offensive player than most people have given him credit for?
Yeah, I'd say that's fair to say. And when you go back and look at some of his numbers in Sault Ste. Marie, you have to take into consideration that when he first started there, he was playing more back-end minutes because they were such a loaded team. You know, and then as he moved forward, you probably would have seen a breakout year this year offensively for him, except for the fact that he was playing in the National Hockey League. So you never got that 19-year-old year to be able to make the determination as him being a superstar, elite player at the junior level. But I think with what we've seen in the National Hockey League and what we've seen through the tournament, the idea still stands that this guy's going to be an excellent player. And I think, you know, the fifth overall pick, which was even for me a bit of a surprise and a little bit higher than I thought he'd go, with Arizona taking him there, it may be very well justified.
Well, Canucks fans love him because he tied the game up for Canada and he sent Quinn Hughes here by virtue of being selected by the Arizona Coyotes. So Canucks fans absolutely love Barrett Hayton, at least in the moment, because they've got Quinn Hughes. Now, in that final, Barrett Hayton's going up against another Canucks prospect, Vasily Podkolzin. What development have you seen in him since he was selected here in Vancouver in June and with what you witnessed over the course of this tournament?
Yeah, you know, pretty interesting guy. And I was a huge fan and a huge proponent of his moving forward. I'd like to see him be a little bit more offensive. Having said that, on this team, that wasn't necessarily his role. So I have a great appreciation for accepting a role that's maybe not a top producing role, but kind of blends in the two-way game that I think he really made his mark for. So again, I'm still a huge fan of this player. I think he's got a little bit more to give offensively. You know, I'd love to see him continue to move forward, working on his skills in terms of his hands. And I'd like to see the skating improve as well. But I'm still a huge, huge fan of this prospect for the way he processes the game, how hard he plays, how responsible he is. But I do believe there's some improvement to be made on the offensive side.
Do you get the sense that the physicality will translate to the National Hockey League and he's going to be a tough piece of business to play against night in, night out?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, this guy's, like, he's thick. He's built. I mean, I remember shaking his hand last year at the Combine, and he had grown even from November before when I'd seen him in our Canada-Russia series, and it was a brick. I mean, this guy's a rock. His mitts are huge. So there's still, I believe, some room to grow on that frame of his, and I think he's going to be a guy who probably plays at about 205, 210. I think he's going to be a real force, but he brings that physicality to the game. There is that offensive side, again, that I think needs to improve. There is the smarts. There's the work ethic. There's a lot of really, really good things about this player. And maybe the very best thing that's about him is the fact that he's under contract for another year. So let him continue to develop in the KHL, not under the pressure and the spotlight of playing wherever it is he might be in North America.
He leaves the tournament with silver. Nils Höglander and the Swedes leave the tournament with bronze. Another Canucks prospect and one that certainly shone at this tournament. What development have you seen in Nils Höglander this season?
Yeah, the Canucks have to be so excited for this guy moving forward. I mean, here's a guy who you go back last year and, you know, there was a lot circulating on social media about his workouts and just how insane his workouts are, how hard he works in the off season. But he's one of those smaller players who's really built well. So he can get underneath guys. There's no question he has the nose for the net. There's no question he has the skill. I mean, the lacrosse goal will go down as one of the best in world junior history. And doing it at full speed is not something that you'd witness before. Usually it's a kind of a stationary lift of the puck. This guy did it well at full speed. But I like the fact that he brings goal scoring. I like the fact that Vancouver's had some success, quite obviously, with taking Swedish players. So they have really good intelligence overseas there. And I like the fact that he really stepped up and played well in this tournament, despite he, too, going through some adversity with the one-game suspension.
Well, and that's the second suspension we've seen for him this year. Got thrown out for five games for an elbow that he threw earlier in the year on his club team. It's hard to say, do you see that as a positive, Sam? But for a player that is viewed as a little smaller, is there something to be said about having an element of pushback in his game?
Yeah, you have to establish that or else you're going to get taken advantage of. And I think about a guy like Alex DeBrincat, who I watched play in Erie and then obviously be very successful with the Chicago Blackhawks. There's a lot of, like, nastiness into his game, but there's more subtlety to it. You have to watch it. You have to pay attention to it. And I think those smaller players, despite, you know, they're not being fighting and whatever else, there's still a lot of physicality when it comes to the body checks and, you know, the open ice hits and the stick work and that sort of thing. And I think as a smaller player, you have to establish that you're not going to be taken advantage of. So to be quite honest with you, if I'm the Canucks, I'm probably not all that disappointed that he's showing the kind of pushback that he has, be it on his club team or be it at the international level at the World Juniors.
Sam Cosentino talking World Juniors, talking Canucks prospects with us here on Sportsnet 650. Back to Team Canada, Alex Lafreniere, hurt during this tournament, but how sensational he was. I'm not sure I have all of the right words for it right now. He certainly cemented himself at the top of this draft. How much higher can the ceiling go here?
It's pretty awesome, isn't it? I mean, what a performance. And again, the term resiliency comes up again after getting hurt and taking a couple of games off. He comes back and doesn't miss a beat. Amazing, amazing stuff from this young man. And I had a feeling that he was going to go into this tournament playing with a chip on his shoulder based on his limited use last year, based on the numbers he's put up this year and wanting to prove to people that the numbers of 70 points in 32 games are not a mirage in Rimouski. So getting hurt kind of stalled the train a little bit after a brilliant performance against the U.S. with his 4 points, but then coming back and going 2 points per game in the three games thereafter, very, very impressive for this young man. So, you know, where's the ceiling? You're always, as a team that's drafting, you always want to look to the center ice or defense positions as being the most impactful for you. But this guy kind of gives you that center ice productivity from the wing. And I was really, really impressed. Not entirely surprised by his performance, but surely impressed by what he was able to bring to the table, especially after coming back from the injury.
You mentioned Joel Hofer early in the interview, takes over partway through this tournament and shut the door for Team Canada. He was sensational. Boy, was he good in that first period of the gold medal game as well, when Canada was in a parade to the penalty box. I'm not going to ask you to predict his future prospects, because that's a fool's errand when it comes to goaltending. Where would you rate his performance relative to some of the other great ones we've seen from Team Canada at the World Juniors?
Well, it's got to be amongst the top five performances, in my opinion. When you earn top goaltender honors in the tournament, you know, it's for very good reason. And I'm right along there with you, Scotty. I'm the absolute worst at predicting goaltenders, I can tell you that. They just take so long to develop. But getting back to Hofer, I've liked the development curve he's been on so far, because he plays as a backup on a Swift Current team that goes to the Memorial Cup in 2018. In 2019, they come back. Their team's not very good at all. He faces a barrage of shots before getting traded to Portland. He goes to Portland and plays in a real up-tempo, risk-taking type of offense. And as a result of that, the quality of shots against in terms of odd man rushes, breakaways, and so on, increase for him. So not only has he been exposed to high-volume shots, he's also been exposed as a goaltender to high quality shots and chances. And I like that part of the developmental curve. Now you walk into a situation where you've had no international experience. You pretty much run completely under the radar because you're playing in Portland and not a lot of people know what goes on with the Winterhawks and their organization. And then you show up at the World Juniors, you patiently wait as a backup, you get your opportunity, and then you don't relinquish the net. I mean, I think it says a lot about the character of this young man. I think it says a lot about the path he's developed on. And I think it says a lot about the St. Louis Blues. If you think about where Jordan Binnington is and you think about the prospects for Joel Hofer in the future, he might be along that very same path where he gets frustrated, gets hung up in the AHL for a little bit, but perseveres and ends up, you know, playing some National Hockey League games as a later round pick.
And maybe he'll be a division rival one day of one of his teammates from this gold medal winning group, local product here, Bowen Byram. I know he wasn't the headliner on this team, but how would you assess his tournament?
Yeah, good. I mean, you know, he was sick, obviously, the one game and couldn't play, and he would have had to have been pretty sick as well, as I know Bowen, for him not to participate. So it, probably a situation where he was sequestered from the team. And you know, the Hockey Canada and the Hunters usually do a pretty good job at, you know, avoiding what kind of potential messes would have been there in terms of his sickness and not being able to play. But Bowen, what I really appreciate about his game over the course of the term is the fact that he adjusted to a different role. I mean, you're in Vancouver, you're the guy, no doubt. 26 goals last year, leads the WHL in playoff scoring. That had never been done by a defenseman before. This time around, he was asked to play a bit of a different role. And where he started the tournament was not where he ended it. started the tournament in more of an offensive role, a little bit too risk-taking, had to scale his minutes back. Then he ends up partnering with Jacob Bernard-Docker in more of a shutdown role. I think for Colorado, that's huge to realize that that part of his game does exist after being so excited about drafting him mainly on what he did offensively. So I'm a huge Bowen Byram fan. I think you can see the character in the young man. Obviously comes from a good hockey background. And I think the people in Vancouver should enjoy him because that opportunity may exist for him to make the jump as early as next year.
Well, he goes number four overall, as you mentioned, to Colorado last year here in Vancouver. This year's draft's in Montreal. We expect Alexis Lafreniere to go first overall. We don't know who's going to have that pick yet. To you, outside of that, what is the most interesting storyline here in the months leading up to June's draft?
Well, Yaroslav Askarov is a huge story for me. The young Russian netminder was pulled a couple of times and eventually relinquished the net to Amir Mistahov because going into this tournament, I think people felt that he was going to take it over and dominate internationally as he's done previously. That never happened. So a lot of people, for me, that I've been talking to say, oh, yeah, this guy's a top 10 guy. He's going to be the highest guy to go since Carey Price went sixth, might even go higher than Price. I think some doubt has started to creep back into the minds of people based on the competition faced here and, you know, his average play with about an 860 save percentage. So that's going to be really challenging for me going forward. Quinton Byfield as the number two guy, I think he's going to have a really good second half here. His minutes were limited. When you compare him to Lafreniere, you have to consider that Byfield is 10 months younger, with Lafreniere being a late October birthday. So the fact exists that essentially there's been 1 year less played by Byfield, and people have to take that into consideration. But I look at some of the other players. Lucas Raymond, decent tournament, not great. Alexander Holtz, great tournament for the Swedes. I look at Jamie Drysdale. He's a guy I had inside my top 10 as a defenseman, especially when Byron was hurt, and he played 20 minutes, scored a goal, and was plus one in the semifinal. He's a guy that probably upped his draft status. Anton Lundell of the Finns, who I definitely had as a top five guy, just getting back to play with his team in the Liga. So maybe he slips a little bit. I think there's been some jumbling as a result of not only the World Juniors, but the World Junior A Challenge before it. So it's going to be fascinating. I think there's a few storylines definitely to keep an eye on there.
Well, and your workload ramps up once again as we start counting down to this June's draft in Montreal. You know we're going to be having this conversation again soon. Sam, get a little bit of rest here, buddy, because you're going to be getting a few phone calls, not only from this show, but many others.
I really appreciate it, Scott. Thanks for having me on, and Happy New Year once again.